This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. For any couple expecting a child, the decision over where and how to give birth is one of the most important decisions they will make. Should they deliver in a hospital with the aid of doctors and nurses, or should they go for a more natural delivery at home with the help of a midwife?
Here in Massachusetts, the number of women who opt for home births is still small, but it's growing. And you may be surprised to learn that Massachusetts does not regulate home birth midwives. That means there's no state body ensuring they're adequately trained or even competent. And while most births go off without a hitch, sometimes complications can turn deadly.
Take the case of Jen Holloman. 2 years ago, she tried to deliver her second child at home with the help of a midwife. She was in labor for nearly 24 hours, and things went horribly wrong. After she was rushed to the hospital, she learned that her child was gone, dead from complications from an infection her midwife allegedly failed to detect. As Holloman told the Boston Globe afterwards, the year after her son's death was the longest and saddest of her life.
And since her son's death, Holloman has become an advocate for new legislation that was the focus of a hearing today on Beacon Hill. The bills would establish practice guidelines for midwifery and, for the first time ever in Massachusetts, establish a state body that would regulate midwives.
Supporters say the law would make home births safer, but opponents say it could never provide the same level of safety that women get in a hospital delivery room.
Our debate today, midwives and how to make home births safer. And joining us now in the studio are Rebecca Herman. She's a board member at the Massachusetts Midwives Alliance. She's also a certified professional midwife who helps perform home deliveries. And Rebecca Herman, welcome and thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
It's good to have you. Also with us, Dr. Erin Tracy. She's an OBGYN at Mass General Hospital and vice chair of the Massachusetts chapter of the American Congress of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. And welcome to you, Dr. Tracy. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
And also joining us by phone, Eugene DeClercq. He's a professor and assistant dean of the School of Public Health at Boston University. Eugene DeClercq, good to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And we want to hear from our listeners. What do you think, listeners, particularly if you've had a home birth with a midwife? Tell us about your experience. Or if you think regulating midwives or encouraging home births is a bad idea, give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And Rebecca Herman, let me start with you if I could. You're a midwife. You help women deliver their babies at home. What's the best argument in favor of this practice rather than delivering babies in a hospital?
Yeah, well, there's a few different pieces to this. One is that fundamentally women and parents in general should have the right to choose the manner and the provider of their care. So at the heart of this is the fact that there are some people for whom delivering in their own environment at home in the absence of potentially stimulating factors such as a person they've never met before providing an invasive physical exam, or due to past negative associations with a hospital, they are just more comfortable with the continuity of care and the familiarity of their home environment.
Sure. So it's understandable some women don't want to, some parents don't want to be subjected to the kind of medicalizing that an in-hospital birth would entail, for example. So before I go on to our two other guests, I just want to be very clear about how you're certified. You're a certified professional midwife, which means you're not certified by the state, but by what entity?
Sure. The Board of Registration for CPMs is NARM, the North American Registry of Midwives, and it is that body that administers the board exams that I sat for to become certified and whom all CPMs have to pass both clinical and written examination.
All right. And yet you favor legislation on Beacon Hill that would establish state oversight of your profession. Why?
Because as things stand at the moment, while anyone who is a CPM is answerable to NARM. So a client who had an issue with my practice could report to NARM and they would investigate. For other people calling themselves midwives, they may be excellent, excellent providers, but they may not be. And in those particular cases, families would have no place to turn.
Okay. So, Erin Tracy, let me turn to you. You're an OBGYN at Mass General Hospital, vice chair of the Massachusetts chapter of the American Congress of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. You oppose this legislation. Why?
We're concerned that licensure is a really important step, and for someone to be licensed to practice medicine in the state, there should be a guarantee that they are competent and have met rigorous standards of education. The CPM, there are two ways to get the CPM certificate. One is a rigorous academic program, and the other one is apprentice-based model, which is what half of CPMs do. And the clinical requirements are only to watch 20 deliveries and to do 20 deliveries and a minimal number of prenatal visits, postpartum visits, and pediatric exams. And we just don't feel that that's adequate training. And as far as formal education, by the CPM standard, you don't actually even need a high school diploma, although this bill stipulates they would need a high school diploma. But we think you need more experience to practice medicine.
But by opposing this legislation, aren't we keeping the situation in something of a free-for-all? In other words, most states require some kind of certification of midwives. This state, it's like the frontier out there. They're not regulated at all. So it seems like this legislation goes at least in that direction that you would favor.
So we agree that it's really important to understand. It's a very complicated issue. So we are actually advocating for another bill before the legislature that would involve a commission studying the practice of certified professional midwives and the practice of home deliveries in this state and trying to make sure it's the safest environment for all. We don't believe licensure really equals regulations because of the complexity of regulating practice, particularly in an out-of-hospital environment.
And just to be clear, because when we started the conversation with Rebecca Herman, there was a case made in favor of, home deliveries in general and the benefits that they carry. Do you agree with that? I mean, is there a place for home deliveries if there can be the kind of regulation that would satisfy in terms of the midwives?
So we believe that it's important to have some – I'm sorry, do you mind restating the question?
Just the question in terms of your view on home deliveries.
So we believe patients should have a choice where they have deliveries as well. We believe there is evidence to suggest that it is safer to have it in a hospital or an accredited birth setting. But we also believe if patients make the choice to have a home delivery, that their care provider should be adequately trained.
Okay. Well, Eugene DeClercq, let me come to you. Give us a sense of the broad picture here, because, at first blush, there's something counterintuitive about this in that I have a midwife in the studio who wants her profession regulated and a doctor who opposes this kind of regulation. What's going on here? Put this in a broader perspective for us.
Well, there's a couple of things happening. One is that we see a trend in recent years of a rise in home births. So nationally, this is small numbers. That needs to be understood throughout. But the number of home births has increased by about 20% nationally in the United States between 2004 and 2008. And that's after a very consistent decline for about 15 years. And so clearly something is happening. In Massachusetts, the increase is even greater, but that's mostly because the numbers are so much smaller. So the base is a little bit smaller. But we've seen a jump in Massachusetts of 42% between 2004 and 2008. Now, for context, that gets us to 337 home births in Massachusetts in 2008, which is a smaller number than we have of cesareans in a single week in Massachusetts.
Right. So still very small numbers, right.
Small numbers, but great emotional power for all of the people involved.
And given those small numbers, Eugene DeClercq, I mean, the Boston Globe did this story a couple of weeks ago, and we made reference to it. This was Jen Holloman's sort of harrowing tale of a home delivery that resulted in the death of her unborn child. In that story, they reported that there were two deaths resulting from home deliveries. What do we make of those numbers? Two deaths in 2009.
The numbers are so small, it would be hard to do much with that. And that's one of the dilemmas. There can't be the sort of systematic randomized trial of home births, probably appropriately, that one uses generally to make clinical decisions around these things, because women are not going to let themselves be randomized to have either a home or a hospital birth choice be taken away from them. And so what we rely on is a number of mostly retrospective studies of home births. But even then, there's a difficulty in that the numbers, the outcomes are generally pretty good for home births because you're talking about low-risk mothers. And so you don't have many deaths as a result of that, which is a good thing, of course. But it also means you're going to be hard-pressed to find differences unless you have very large numbers. And in the United States, for instance, we generally don't have enough numbers to be able to actually do that, particularly if we're trying to look only at planned home births and not all home births. About one in seven home births is unplanned. It's just an accident.
Sure.
And our data doesn't stratify that very easily at this point.
Listeners, we're talking about home births and proposed legislations to regulate midwives in Massachusetts. We've got a lot of callers on the line already. You can give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Let's delve right into our callers because they're lining up in a hurry. Erica is calling from Cambridge. Hi, Erica.
Hi. I just wanted to give my plug for home birth in general. It's a fabulous option to have. It's not for everyone. One thing I thought that was interesting, you're sort of posing this debate as black and white, that the medical community is sort of against it, that midwives support this legislation. I think it's a little bit more complicated than that, and I think that if the reason I chose home birth were many reasons. I wanted the most natural birth possible. I think it's best for the mom and it's best for the baby, and it was best for our family. Like, you know, my whole family was involved in the whole thing, and we were surrounded by help, you know, beginning to end. All of that to say, I don't think it's as simple as having the midwives regulated. I think that they need to be involved in the crafting of the legislation. And the fact that there is a business behind, you know, hospital births is a real factor that I don't think people consider when they're hearing the fear-mongering language used by people who are opposed to the legislation. They are often told that it's unsafe to be at home unless you have all of these restrictions. But let's talk about who's making those rules and who's got money in the game.
Well, Erica, let me just jump on your first point because I really want to get Rebecca, actually I want to get everyone to chime in on it. But one of the things you said was talking about having these midwives involved in the legislation. Rebecca Herman, let me come to you as a midwife. It seems like the effort, one of the big efforts is here is how to integrate you folks into the medical system more. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. I think one of the big pieces that I see in reading the literature is that what we can say for sure is that out-of-hospital birth is going to be safer when there are smoother transports when that's needed and when there's a better system of collaboration between sort of the first tier of care and the tertiary care that obstetricians need to provide. Yeah. And so one of the pieces that's key in this legislation is that it creates the committee, but that committee, which is composed of midwives but also physicians, is going to be able to be dynamic and responsive to the evidence as it emerges so that the practice rules and guidelines and regulations can be a complex discussion and can really respond to what we're seeing in the data.
Erin Tracy, do you want to chime in on that same question, this idea that the best ways, I guess, I mean, home births are there. It's a growing phenomenon. The midwives are there. What's the best way to integrate them into the medical system?
So ACOG, my national specialty organization, previously had a monograph that said the safest place for delivery is in a hospital or an accredited birthing center. After re-reviewing the data, the statement is still the same, but now ACOG has come forward with guidelines about if one makes the decision to have a home delivery, it is really important to talk with your provider about issues of transport, about issues of the qualifications of the provider, about issues of how you would do a transportation, what would be the criteria that would lead you to be transferred to a hospital. So I think those discussions need to happen, and we need to try to have as seamless a transition as we can when we have those transfers.
Say more, though, about this issue of transport. You're talking about literally how to transport a mother, for example, from a home birth system into a home birth setting into a hospital when and if necessary.
Yes, I've heard anecdotal stories of patients being in the back of a car driving and stopping at red lights waiting to get to the hospital, and by the time they get to the hospital, it's sometimes difficult to really assist with the situation. So we need to have a smooth transition where if a patient makes a decision for home delivery, they've identified a hospital they can go to. There's a very clear plan who would take them there, how they would get there, and make it as speedy and safe as possible.
Let's go to Lisa, who's calling from Salem. Hi, Lisa. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Boy, I have a couple of things to say, but most importantly, I think what's not being said in this discussion is that it's not simply a hospital birth or a home birth. There is another really viable, wonderful alternative, and that is having a birth in the hospital with midwives attending, or a birth in a freestanding birth clinic, which is affiliated with a hospital, so that you have the individualized non-medical event for your birth,
Lisa, I'm glad you brought that. Yeah, Lisa, I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because this does get sort of complicated, and I wanted to bring this up. In fact, my son, 3 months ago, was born in the Mount Auburn Hospital in the midwifery program. These are registered nurses, for listeners that don't know, who have special training as midwives. The doctors are there if necessary. As it turns out, in my son's case, we never saw the doctor. The doctor didn't have to come. Does that represent, well, let me come to you, Eugene DeClercq. Does that sort of represent some kind of middle ground here in this debate or in this discussion of regulation?
Well, that represents the ground that happens in most industrialized countries. The system in most of these countries is that midwives are the what they would term the primary caregiver in maternity care, and care would start with the midwife. There's a phrase they use in England now that all mothers deserve a midwife, and some deserve an obstetrician too, or some need an obstetrician too. And I think the philosophy there is you start with a midwife who can focus not only on your medical care, but in a more holistic way, and that you work seamlessly, as we've discussed, with an obstetrician or obstetricians to make sure that if difficulties arise, that there is an easy transition between them.
Sure.
The problem is in the United States that the proportion, United States is relatively unique in the industrialized world in that only 8% of the births are by midwives, and those numbers actually have started, in terms of certified nurse midwives, have actually leveled and started to go down slightly in recent years. And so in most countries, midwives deliver 60 or 70% of the babies. United States, it's a fraction of that.
Rebecca Herman, I want to ask you as the midwife in here, what do you think of that? We're calling it the middle ground here. Midwives who are trained as registered nurses and perform essentially as midwives in a hospital setting.
Absolutely. Nurse midwives are phenomenal providers, and they provide a tremendous important role, not only in the middle ground that we're talking about here, but specifically in providing high quality care to our typically underserved populations, so low socioeconomic groups.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have worked in freestanding birth centers as well as in a home birth practice, so I'm familiar with both models of care, and there's no question that birth centers and hospital-based midwifery practices can provide options for those women who are not comfortable at home but also do not wish typical medicalized care. It doesn't change the fact that there's still going to be a segment of the population who wants that really independent home-based care.
Sure.
Anthony, could I just jump in with
absolutely,
one quick point?
Eugene, go right ahead.
Just that the number of births in freestanding birth centers has been going down in recent years, and more of them have had to close because of a variety of constraints, legal and through insurance coverage that have been put on them. So they do present a nice option in between the two, but they're increasingly rare options. It's like it was like 12,000 of births in freestanding birth centers in 2008 nationally.
Interesting. Let's go to Connie, who's calling from Norwood. Hi, Connie.
Hi.
You're on the air. What's on your mind?
I agree with the physician that home births are not safe. If the mother isn't progressing the way in which she should and there's a need for an emergency C-section, definitely that service isn't provided at home. And there is the lack of a neonatal intensive care unit standing by should the need arise for an infant to be transported there quickly. I don't know if midwives use fetal heart monitors to keep up with the progress of the birthing process. It just seems very unsafe. I had a completely natural birth with my second son in a hospital setting, and he was delivered by a physician, and my mother was delivered at home by a midwife and nearly died.
All right, we take your point, Connie. I want to put that to Aaron Tracy and Rebecca Herman. Let me start with you, Aaron Tracy. Does that sum up some of the concerns that you would have?
Yeah, if you look at the literature, there's about a 2 to 3-fold increased risk of neonatal mortality. Now, most patients will do well, thankfully, wherever they deliver, in the hands of whatever providers is assisting them. To the point about the certified nurse midwives, I also want to emphasize how welcome we welcome their participation. Certified nurse midwives are incredibly well trained. At Mass General, they really practice and see patients without our involvement at all, as you pointed out. And certified nurse midwives and obstetricians have a wonderful collaborative relationship, and we actually supported legislation this year to eliminate supervisory language of physicians over certified nurse midwives. We believe they should be able to see patients independently. But I agree. There are certain things not available in a home that are available in a hospital, such as blood transfusion, availability of surgery, neonatal resuscitation, things that are infrequently needed but sometimes emergently needed.
And Rebecca Herman, what do you say to that? Connie laid out some of those concerns. So did Aaron Tracy.
I think it's one of the big misconceptions. There's no question we do not have operating theaters at home. We never would. Yes, there are tools that are available, but the basic platform she mentioned, the caller mentioned fetal monitoring, we absolutely very, very carefully watch the baby, track fetal heart tones to assess how that baby is handling labor throughout the process. We do carry equipment to help babies get started who are not breathing on their own when they're born. We do carry medications to manage postpartum hemorrhage. So we're not going in there just with, you know, our hands and our minds, although those are very valuable tools. We do also receive training and make sure we have with us the ability to manage the most common complications that can come up.
Let's get another call into this conversation. Elizabeth is calling from Beacon Hill in Boston. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi. There's a lot of talk about the safety of home birth, but there hasn't been, at least on this show anyway, a definition of what that safety is and what that might mean for individual patients. I had a hospital birth with my son in 2008, and I ended up having a C-section where the anesthesia failed, and I spent the entire time screaming.
Oh my God.
Until I went into numb shock. And after that, there was months and months and months of pain that was not addressed by my OB, and it took not seeing one but two different OBs. The second one referred me to an even higher specialist than she was to get that resolved. In the meantime, dealing with the trauma of that, I actually had post-traumatic stress disorder and postpartum depression, all related to the delivery in the hospital.
So, Elizabeth, I'm so sorry. So obviously the point here, and I just want to move on and get a response from our guests, and you make the point quite eloquently, is that being in a hospital with all the equipment and all the doctors is no guarantee for a safe and painless and uncomplicated birth. Eugene DeClercq, I wonder if I could get you to chime in on that. Is there... obviously, we don't have a randomized controlled clinical trial because that's not possible in this case. But is there a sort of definitive set of studies that could actually put this debate to rest?
No. There was a study that's widely cited, and Dr. Tracy cited the finding. It was a meta-analysis that tried to pull together different studies around home birth. The finding that she cites is one of its findings. It also found that there was actually no difference in perinatal mortality between low-risk home births and low-risk planned hospital births. And for reasons that have become very controversial, the authors chose to then exclude the biggest study that's been done of home births, look at neonatal mortality, which resulted in most of the study being focused on one state study in Washington State, in which they were not able to actually distinguish between planned and unplanned home births. So, no, it isn't resolved. There is the biggest study that's ever been done, and I know this is riveting for your listeners, but the biggest study that's ever been done has been underway for the last 3 years in England around this, because in England the home birth rate has gone from about 0.5% to almost 3% in the last decade and a half. And its findings are expected to come out in probably December. But to say, at the end of the day, that's not going to resolve this either.
I wonder, we don't have time really for this last question, and I think I'll just put it to you, Eugene, while I have you. In the absence of a sort of definitive conclusion on the safety of this, it seems like a lot of this comes down to almost a cultural divide here. Those who favor home births for a variety of reasons, including the belief that it's more natural, versus doctors who understandably sort of see many of the worst results of those few home births that go badly.
And that's why the debate is so passionate.
Right.
That it isn't something, there wouldn't be a study, I don't think, that would prove to each side one set of results that they'd all agree on.
Right, right. Well, last word. Let me get a last word from you, Dr. Aaron Tracy, as our time runs out here. But final word. We've got this legislation on Beacon Hill. Where's this going to end up?
So I hope it ends up that we continue the dialogue and we actually get better data and we actually appoint the commission to study this. I think we need to better understand the issue and its complexities. I don't think we're at the point to adopt a new licensing board. I think it's an expensive endeavor and I don't know that it would achieve what we want. But we need to continue to have this conversation.
And that we will do. And I want to thank all of you for helping us to do that. That was Erin Tracy. She's an OBGYN at Mass General Hospital and vice chair of the Massachusetts chapter of the American Congress of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
And Rebecca Herman, a certified professional midwife and board member of the Massachusetts Midwives Alliance, thank you as well.
Thank you.
It's good to have you. And Eugene DeClercq, professor and assistant dean of the School of Public Health at Boston University, thanks so much for joining our conversation today. We're very grateful.
Thank you.
And thanks to our listeners. And listeners, you can continue this conversation at radioboston.org. We'll be back after a short break. Up next, tiered health insurance. What is it, and why is it being called the wave of the future? Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.